It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Recreational use of ATVs and UTVs is an increasingly popular sport with over 412,000 registered machines in Wisconsin. That's the DNR's count, documented in its last budget proposal that also said increased mileage and use of these trails means that more maintenance, of course, is required. We talk about safety regulations, the trail system that is a web of thousands of miles. Join in 800-642-1234. Jacob Holzklaw is here, Recreation Warden for the Department of Natural Resources West Central Region based in Eau Claire. Jake, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Good to be back.
Well, yeah, we talked last year, in March, about just how state parks were seeing their attendance numbers go through the roof early in the pandemic. How popular is outdoor recreation this season compared to previous years?
Boy, I think it's just as popular as it has been the last year or two. And I don't know if it's just because once people got outside, they wanted to keep, you know, being in the outdoors and hitting up the state parks. But I have two state parks immediately close to me, and that would be Lake Wissota State Park and then Brunet State Park. And both of those, particularly on the weekends and sometimes even midweek, seem to be just at capacity. So there's a lot of folks using our state parks this year for sure.
Can you talk about how the number of registered four-wheelers in Wisconsin continues to grow? And, you know, wondering if our trail system and the regulations have kept up with that growth and can support it.
Yeah, so I actually just looked it up, and so far as our current numbers stand, we're looking at over 472,000 ATVs and UTVs that are registered in the state of Wisconsin. And that's just machines that stay in the state. If you add out-of-state machines that have to purchase a trail pass to operate on the trail system and the route system, you could be looking at 20, 25,000 more machines. And that's based on some numbers by the Wisconsin ATV Association. So, yeah, for sure, there's a ton of registered machines. You mentioned a trail system, but we also have over 46,000 miles of road routes. And so really all throughout the state, this ATV and UTV growth has exploded. And numerous counties in my area have most, if not all, of the county and town roads open to ATV use. So it's really become something that's on the landscape. I think people are getting a lot more used to seeing these machines running on the road and basically sharing it with vehicles.
What does the DNR need to keep up with this massive growth in ATV riders?
Yeah, that is a tough question. I mean, we have wardens all throughout the state, and then we also provide a enforcement program through some grants where local county sheriff's departments can actually get equipment purchased for them, and it also covers some of their hours and their time, and so that they can get out there and help enforce certain rules and just keep people safe out there. But because it has exploded so quickly, it is kind of a tough one to that is kind of tough to judge, because it just seems like there's more work than there are people to do the job.
Can you give us a snapshot of the trail system and where people like to ride their four-wheelers?
So there's a couple main areas. I think a lot of people who are familiar with the sport are familiar with Black River Falls, Jackson County area. That also connects into Clark County. Clark County is actually one of the counties where a lot of their roadways are open to ATVs and UTVs. And then you have some other sections of trail up in the northern part of the state, northeast part of the state. Most of our actual trail systems are going to be kind of in that northern half of the state. But like I said, the road routes are all over the state now. Even some of the southern counties and southwest counties of the state.
Talking with Jake Holzklaw with us on ATV, UTV ridership that has seen such significant growth around our state. Jake is recreation warden with the DNR based in Eau Claire. You can join in on ATVs, 800-642-1234. What change you have seen in your community with four-wheelers. So, Jake, when you look at where people tend to ride and where do people tend to ride their vehicles illegally, what do you see there?
So I would say the most common issue is operators riding on a roadway that maybe isn't a designated route. So in Wisconsin, the roadways are supposed to be posted. There's supposed to be some kind of a sign that shows the operators where they can legally operate. And oftentimes we'll run into situations where folks are riding in areas that are closed to ATV traffic. Every now and then we get folks riding off a trail or onto some private property. And, you know, that's a whole nother situation that then we can work through. There are statutes that enforce that. We kind of loosely refer to it as ATV trespass. So if folks are traveling off a roadway onto somebody's private farm field or something like that, we can work with the landowner and hopefully, you know, resolve that situation.
There was also an incident where riders went on Green Acres Golf Course, causing thousands of dollars in damages, and the nearby trail is now closed. How are incidents like that in Marinette County typically investigated?
So typically there'll be some kind of a complaint. Something like that would probably go through the sheriff's department first. So the sheriff's department, they're going to receive a complaint like that, and then that basically webs out to the local wardens in the area. And traditionally, we just try to work together to try to resolve the situation. Unfortunately, sometimes it's tough to figure out who did that. You know, if there wasn't somebody that actually witnessed it, or if there wasn't some kind of a camera system, it can be really tough sometimes, unfortunately, to track down who did that. And what's very disturbing about that incident is that you can tell they were just intentionally driving around, just kind of a joyride, and then the resulting tens of thousands of dollars in damage, or so I've heard, is very unfortunate. And yeah, the unfortunate side effect of that is then if there's a trail that is nearby there, a lot of times the landowner is going to want to shut that down. And so it really does have a negative impact on anybody else that's legally, you know, good family people that are trying to use that trail and recreate safely and responsibly. So it is tough.
How do you see ATVs affect the environmental habitat where they're allowed? I mean, how can it change a natural area?
Well, I mean, there are standards as far as where the trails are set up and how they're designed. And generally, using Jackson County, Black River area as an example, I mean, they have a trail maintenance program, and the ATVs are supposed to stay on that actual trail system. If the trail goes through or near a wetland, it's usually marked pretty well or barricaded in a way that the machines have to stay on the trail. But yeah, sometimes they're going to get off trail and get into the wetlands, or every now and then we'll see folks operating on maybe stream banks or lake beds, you know, things like that. And that can create a lot of damage. And that's something that we, you know, if we catch somebody doing that, that's definitely something that we would want to take enforcement action on because of the environmental issues. So, yeah, I just want to reiterate, you know, that the vast majority of ATV operators and UTV operators are very good, responsible people. And just unfortunately, there's some folks that, because these machines can go all over and in a lot of different environments, to them, it's more fun to go into, say, a wetland or area where they're not supposed to travel. And so that's our challenge.
Jake Holzclaw with us, DNR Recreation Warden in Eau Claire, as we talk about the growth of ATV and UTVs, their use in our state. Join in on the trail system, on the road routes, what you see in your community with people driving them, questions about regulation changes. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. For the past 20 years, ATV registrations, they have demonstrated a pronounced upward trend, according to the DNR, more than tripling since 1999. Join in on their use in your community, your experiences as a rider of a four-wheeler, 800-642-1234. DNR Recreation Warden, based in Eau Claire Region, Jake Holzclaw, stays with us. Let's bring on a call. Tom is here from Madison. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have occasion to see a lot of ATVs and UTVs operating on county highways where they're not supposed to be operating in Adams and Marquette County. There's no enforcement, virtually no enforcement, and they're dangerous. They can't go the, you know, speed limit in some cases, and if there's hilly terrain and you're coming around a corner up a hill on a car with a car, you know, it's worse than running into a buggy. And what they do to the trails is despicable. Those trails should be for horseback and bicycle riding, no ATVs, no UTVs, and no snowmobiles. Those people get hammered, and then they get out there and they're irresponsible users.
Tom, you bring up a lot of points that I want Jake to address. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, so first off, just with the enforcement, I get it. A lot of people are frustrated because there's just simply not enough of us sometimes to enforce the existing rules. And I am a bit familiar with that Adams Marquette area. I know a lot of the roadways are open legally, and that's a local decision. So the local town boards and the counties can decide, you know, which roadways to open up to traffic by ATVs and UTVs. And yeah, I get it. But there are sometimes shared trails. I guess I'm not sure exactly about that area, if there'd be shared trails with horseback riders, something like that. But generally ATV trails are kind of their own thing, just because of that, because we realize that there are some definite, there could definitely be some negative impacts if they're, you know, riding machines near where people are riding on horses or walking or biking or something like that. So generally, at least in my area, majority of the ATV trails are just going to kind of be their own thing. And then the winter, they may convert over to snowmobile trails. But that's a whole nother animal that involves some private land and easements onto private land that landowners let. They'll let the snowmobile clubs, you know, put a trail on their property. So yeah, I get it. There's definitely a frustration there. But there is, again, for the most part, most of these operators are very good, well-meaning people, and they do abide by the laws, and we try to get out there and show a presence when we can, and we try to get out there and enforce the rules as much as we can.
Jake, what about drinking and being under the influence and ATV use? What have you seen there?
Yeah, so I mean, it's the same rules apply in an ATV and a UTV as they would to a motor vehicle. So folks have to stay at the very least below an 0.8 as far as their blood alcohol level. So they just can't operate one of those vehicles while they're under the influence. So, and if I can say, it can almost be more dangerous to operate one of an ATV or a UTV under the influence than even a motor vehicle, just because of dynamic nature of the machine, and the fact that in the case of ATVs, it's a rider active machine, so the rider kind of has to shift their body weight to from side to side to operate the machine properly. And if somebody's intoxicated, that's going to be a lot more difficult. Also, just the terrain that they're on, whether it's a trail, could be a lot more rugged and a lot bigger a problem for somebody if they're under the influence.
When driving your ATV at night, what should you be mindful of? Like, what lights are required?
Yeah, so ATV, they have to have working headlights, working taillights. They have to, like anything, you know, look ahead, look down the trail, be aware of your surroundings. I myself have had some experiences where I was on a machine and almost hit a deer. So it's just like a motor vehicle where you kind of got to watch out. There could be animals in the trail or on the roadway route. So folks have to be cautious. I would also recommend, you know, reducing your speed at night and not necessarily, you know, going the speed limit or the allowed speed for the ATVs. It's a smart practice to slow down and just be more cautious when it's dark.
Talking about the growing use of ATVs in our in Wisconsin, and we have DNR Recreation Warden Jake Holzclaw. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Pat is here from Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was just curious about ATVs and UTVs. Do you have to have a driver's license? How old do you have to be? Do you have to pass the vehicle inspection? Do you have to have an insurance policy with you? I know if you're out competing with concrete trucks and school buses and gravel trucks and sedans and SUVs, pickup trucks, and you don't have signal lights and brake lights, it might make it a little hazardous.
Great questions. Yes. Pat, you have several questions right there. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to get them answered here quickly. State law does not require a valid driver's license to operate one of these machines. However, anybody born after January 1st of 1988 needs to take an ATV safety course. And that basically, a Wisconsin ATV safety course. And what that does is that gets folks up to par on all the regulations, everything that they need to know as far as operating on trails and road routes. And so it's basically, it's not a specific age necessarily, but it's a date set in time. Other than that, people that are 16 years old or older can operate a machine if they've taken the course by themselves on a roadway route. And then from 12 to 16, they can operate on a roadway route or a trail with an adult accompanying them. So an adult would have to be along with them. So we don't want kids, you know, under 16 operating on a roadway by themselves. And then I know you mentioned
insurance. Whether the machine, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So currently that's actually not a requirement, but we are seeing that just with the uptick in a lot of newer machines, especially some of these machines are fairly expensive. And for the most part, what I've seen is folks choose to get insurance on them, even though it's not required. But yeah, definitely a good point.
Jerry from Wisconsin Dells called, couldn't stay, but said that they live in a rural intersection, and although ATVs are not allowed, Jerry sees a lot of them and says they are loud and obnoxious. Wisconsin has an exhaust sound level requirement, I understand. How is that enforced?
Yeah, so that can be a tough one because it actually has to take a specific, there's a sound meter requirement for that. So somebody can't just basically say, oh yeah, that's a loud machine and call it good. So one way to deal with that is we can actually look, and one of the other requirements is that an ATV has a spark arrestor. Mm-hmm. ATVs and UTVs have to have a U.S. Forest Service approved spark arrestor. And a lot of times, some of these louder machines aren't going to have that. So that's one way we can deal with it. The other issue is that, you know, if he does have a specific complaint in that area, I would contact the local sheriff's department or the local field warden, and hopefully they can just spend a little bit more time in that area, you know, providing some visibility and maybe some enforcement. And sometimes folks just need, you know, a little bit of education on the rules and on those sound requirements.
Well, Jake, thank you for joining us.
Yep, no problem. It's been great.
Jake Holzklaw, Recreation Warden with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, based out of the Eau Claire office, serves 8 counties in western Wisconsin. Up ahead, we're in conversation with the Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr. Will be here. We look at the site for a new youth prison in Milwaukee, other pressing issues with the state's prison system. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update and a story from Wisconsin Life. They're next on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher.
Another summer is fading away, and try as we might to keep it here, fall and winter are just ahead. Amy Jo Barker reflects on summer delights and tells us how we might be able to preserve a little of it, even on the coldest nights.
The detritus of a beach day lies strewn about me, like so many artifacts, jutting half in and half out of the sand. I sit on my warm, rumpled towel, ice cream cone images stitched colorfully upon it, here in this sunny place between Bayfield and Washburn, Wisconsin. Later, I will sit and rest on driftwood, which lies on the beach, as I follow my children's small footprints and the memory of my father's large ones. Floaties, buckets, flip-flops, hats, oars, and umbrellas. Add to this sunburns, bug bites, splinters, and unidentifiable rashes. Each time we combine families, we add a few things, lose a few things, add a few memories, lose a few brain cells, have a few fights, dole out hugs and tears, maybe true confessions, maybe Whopper fishtails, maybe sincere apologies and musings. Time at the cabin, time at the beach, time with good friends, time with family. Time to realize we are now. Life is now. A part of summer, a part of our interwoven lives, our childhood memories, our grown-up daydreams. Days in the still and cool waters, in the warm, swampy tadpole edges. Mornings on the porch, hands wrapped around warm coffee mugs with hushed conversations between. Afternoons on the sand, in the bright sunshine, with screen door slams, cool glasses of lemonade and suds. Hours of packing, driving, and unpacking. Work first, and then the playing. Fishing, fishing, and fishing. Cleaning, cooking, family members, friends, sunsets. Lined up for dinner, oldest to newest. Plates rattling, glasses clinking. Everyone together in this place to savor summer. The Big Lake, Lake Superior, here beside the Schwamigan Bay, means summer to me, but also the small inland lakes, with their cabins nestled and hidden in the woods, with long lines of family and friends trailing annually to meet one another. Summer in Wisconsin. Here in our woods, our lakes, our beaches, summer is summer more than any other place. It is in our hearts, our memories, our family histories, and our souls. Evenings on the dock, walking the woods, watching the pounding rains, kinging one another, stealing bishops and rooks, dealing cards, telling tales, slapping skeeters, laughter, smiles, sighs, stars, wishes, days filled with pine cones and rock collections, warm sleeping children, happy hearts, beating the drum tap of days, dropping them one by one into life's jar like so many fireflies, so many glowing memories, added one upon another until full and overflowing with summers saved. Now crisp fall days and lean days of winter will come. Then the smell of pine and cedar will drift to our senses out of context and we'll remember. We'll remember and run down cellar. Peer at the jar, open the lid, and let it flow over us with a fond ache and a smile. Go ahead, dip in and eat it with a spoon of gratefulness. Summer canned. Is there anything better?
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are more than 20,000 people incarcerated in our state's 37 correctional institutions and centers from the latest weekly census. 114 youth are incarcerated at juvenile facilities, mostly at Lincoln Hills, the youth prison slated to close. So I'm set up for our conversation, which is where we start, on juvenile corrections with Wisconsin Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr is here. Join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Secretary Carr, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate, and thank you for having me again.
Good morning. So with the Milwaukee Common Council recently approving a site for building the new youth corrections facility to replace Lincoln Hills, what is on your mind about this site selection?
Well, what's top of mind for all of us in the Evers administration and especially at DOC is that we start to engage the community in the various processes that are going to go forward in getting this project completed. It was not a surprise to me, but it is amazing that there are multiple processes that have to go forward at the same time. You have the legislative process, you have the building process through the Department of Administration, and you have the approval process that happens at the local level with the City of Milwaukee, where you have to go through various zoning committees and public works committees and all these other approvals that have to be obtained before you can actually break ground and start building up a project of this magnitude. And at each one of those steps, there's going to be a considerable opportunity for community engagement.
So you have to check a lot of boxes before you break ground. Is there any timeline estimate on when that might happen?
Well, you know, we started our community engagement efforts this week. There were two meetings with various community groups who have an interest in this issue. And the schedule for the processes on the city level, those are being developed. As you probably know, the city government is not shut down, but a lot of folks are on vacation in the month of August, and we're just back getting back to work in September. So a number of those things are moving forward as quickly as possible.
Given the sky-high inflation, the supply chain problems, the labor shortage, is $42 million adequate to build the facility that is envisioned for Milwaukee?
Well, you know, those budgetary details are what we know at this time. As we move forward in the project, they will continuously be evaluated to ensure that there is sufficient funding to complete the project.
There are currently 69 male juveniles at Lincoln Hills in the latest census. The facility was designed with a capacity of 519. How many youth will this new Milwaukee facility hold at capacity?
Right now, our plan is for the facility to hold 32 youth. And we have to keep in mind that our Type 1 facility that we want to build in the City of Milwaukee is part of a larger statewide plan that takes into account that there would be some additional county-run facilities and additional alternatives to incarceration that would be created for the youth as we move forward.
Well, when you look at the overcrowding situation at the Milwaukee County facility, the Val Phillips Juvenile Justice Center, how does that situation inform how you go forward with this Milwaukee facility to replace Lincoln Hills?
Well, as you may know, and just recently the legislature authorized additional funding to this to Milwaukee County so that they could increase their capacity and participate in the statewide plan by building a secure residential care center for children and youth at their current location in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. So that is also part of the statewide plan, as well as the same type of county-run facility is being built in Racine County. They just were authorized additional funding so that they could complete their project as well.
Let's bring on a call now. Jeremy is joining us from Sheboygan. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a relative who was incarcerated at Lincoln Hills in the early to mid-90s. And he was the victim of supervised torture by the, I suppose you would call them guards there, serving weeks on end in solitary confinement, forced participation in Fight Club style events as 16-year-olds, and just a complete bedlam, supervised by the guards. Hearing that this is going to move Lincoln Hills from Milwaukee, or from where it is now to Milwaukee, Milwaukee's record of behaving law enforcement officers and correctional officers is probably just as abysmal as it is where Lincoln Hills was. And I'm just wondering, like, what are we going to do to protect these children from the hands of the monsters where there is a historical precedent of systematic supervised torture of children?
Jeremy, thank you. Secretary Carr, go ahead.
Okay. Jeremy, thank you for your question, and I'm really sorry to hear that your family member had the type of experience that you described. What I can tell you now is that, you know, those activities and similar instances that occurred under the previous administration have not occurred under the Evers administration, which started in January of 2019. I can certainly tell you that, you know, what we do now is we have changed the whole philosophical operation of Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake from that of a formal youth prison to that of a treatment facility. We have focused on trauma-informed care. We've implemented something that is called DBT, or Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, as the primary treatment program for all the youth at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. You know, in fact, I would just mention that DBT is a cognitive behavioral therapy that help youth control their emotions and their behavior.
I want to jump in here, but it is, you know, treatment with a staffing crisis. You know, the June report from the court-ordered monitor says that, you know, the staffing issue of not enough counselors is causing youth to be confined to their rooms for long periods and creating deteriorating attitudes and behaviors among the youth. What is being done about that?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Kate, because I will tell you that today the monitor will be releasing another report, another quarterly report. And that report indicates that things have improved considerably. Our hiring is up, and we're able to provide more time out of their rooms for the youth. We look forward to hiring more staff in the next month or so that are going to enable us to provide as much out time and programming for the kids as possible.
Let's pause there with Kevin Carr, Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Join in on the system, probation, recidivism, what you want to explore about your experience in a state correctional facility, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the head of the Department of Corrections Secretary, Kevin Carr, looking at a range of issues facing our state's prison system, including the workforce shortage. We're going to get at more there. The Corrections Department staffing and vacancy dashboards, they show more than 1,400 vacant positions at adult facilities. Join in on the system in our state, 800-642-1234. Kevin Carr, Secretary of the Department of Corrections, stays with us. Let's go to Lisa now in Appleton. Lisa, what's on your mind?
I just have a question, sort of a two-part question. With that Lincoln Hills being vacated in the years to come, those 500 and so beds, is that still sort of safe slated for rehabilitation with adults? And then would that also help alleviate the thought that we need to build more prisons in the state of Wisconsin with the help of those 519 beds?
Lisa, thank you for that. Secretary Carr.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for that question. I welcome those two questions. The plan is for us to convert Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake to a minimum security drug treatment facility. And as you indicated, it was built to hold 500 persons. We anticipate that that's going to create about 400 additional minimum security beds that we believe are sorely needed in our system and will eliminate the need for us to consider building new adult prisons. The governor and I really have not looked positively on the possibility of spending close to $750 million to build any new prisons in the state of Wisconsin. We believe that there's a lot of ways that we can achieve public safety, because public safety, there is no higher priority for our administration than public safety. I was in law enforcement for 40 years before I became the secretary. I was the U.S. Marshal, and I was at the Milwaukee Sheriff's Office for 30 years. Public safety has been my priority in my working adult life. So, you know, we're going to do things in a way that keeps the public safe, and that includes looking at strategies that will reduce recidivism, as well as provide folks in our care with the skills, training, and treatment that they need so that when they release, they don't come back.
But it seems like with that vision, you envision a growing population of incarcerated people in Wisconsin. And in Governor Evers' 2018 campaign for governor, he pledged to cut Wisconsin's prison population in half. And, you know, it was at 23,000 at the end of 2019. We're looking at about 20,000 now. When you look at, you know, growing the Lincoln Hills site as a minimum security prison, does that mean growing the prison population in our state?
No, it doesn't. It just means reallocating our prison population in a way that right sizes the operation of our facilities. See, if our system right now was the design capacity is about 17,500 beds. As you indicated, we're at about 20,000 beds. So we still have a long way to go just to get to the design capacity, let alone anything beyond that. The need for those minimum security beds is high. And in my opinion, in the 4 years that I've been here, I really believe that a lot of our most critical work with folks in our care happens at the minimum security level. those are the folks that are going to be releasing to our communities really in a short amount of time. And so we try to provide those folks with as much programming, training, and treatment as possible to get them prepared to reenter our communities. So more minimum beds, the better.
Secretary Carr, you alluded to this earlier, that you are staffing up, at Lincoln Hills to look at those staffing shortages for a moment. At adult facilities, over 1,400 vacancies right now. Governor Evers gave that $3 an hour pay raise to correctional officers in March. What are you doing about this workforce shortage?
We are doing everything that we humanly can to advertise, to try to attract new employees, and those pay increases have actually reduced the number of retirements. So you have two issues. You have getting new people in the front door, and you try to slow down the number of people going out the back door. There are opportunities at the Department of Corrections where a new employee can make $31 an hour starting. So here's my pitch to anybody that's listening that's looking for a public service job that is related to public safety, that want, job security and a really diverse and exciting career. Go to wisconsin.gov and apply for the Department of Corrections. We are seeing, as a result of those pay increases, increasing numbers of applicants, and our classes are getting larger as the year has progressed.
So the additional pay raises have helped, attract and retain employees?
That's correct.
We have less than a minute left, 30 seconds. Budget request to the governor due next Thursday. What is your top priority?
Well, there's a number of priorities that I really can't identify for you at this time because, our budget request is confidential. But what I can say about our budget request is that it's going to be focused on providing services to the persons that we care for in our system in a variety of ways, whether that's increased programming that we believe leads to higher public safety and technology improvements that will help us deliver services to our population.
Secretary Carr, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Kevin,
thank you for having me.
Yes, Kevin Carr, Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Just ahead, we check in on traffic accidents and fatalities. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.